This is the Talking Split Podcast.
Welcome, coaches, to the Talking Split Podcast. I am Rob Calder, the Coach Development Coordinator at Basketball Victoria. With me this week is the High Performance Coach for the Country Women, Zoe Carr. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
And the man that got the late call up due to Coops getting inked up, Darren Best, the High Performance Coach for the Metro Men. Welcome, Bestie.
You mean I wasn't the first preference?
No. As it turns out, we're on a rotation basis. Like, this is like the soccer. Like, you get the call up for the Champions League games, but you miss the cold night in Stoke somewhere
along
the line.
It's ratings based though, right?
It usually is. Yeah. Usually is. And we tend to hit better ratings when you're on here, Bestie. I don't know what that is. I don't know if you sit there and just replay the podcast over and over in your own time, but I appreciate it if you do.
I'll take it.
Yeah, we'll take it. Absolutely. So big thanks to all the coaches that have thrown the coaching assist and shared the podcast over the course. We do want to try and reach as many coaches as we possibly can, or just basketball lovers in general that enjoy listening to us talk rubbish for, you know, an hour or so per week. We appreciate it all. You can get in touch via Twitter if you need to. Zoe, they can get you on.
At ZoeCarr85.
You can get Darren Best on darren.best@basketballvictoria.com.au.
Get it together, Bestie.
No, I respect it. No. Like, it's a different reasoning behind it. See, Zeppel, when he had no Twitter account, that was purely strategic because he had like 15 burner accounts, whereas Bestie's just like, no, like, I'm out.
Someone in this room actually sent me an example of why Twitter is bad just recently.
Certainly have been you, Zoe.
And I was about to write back, see, this is why.
Vindication.
Yeah, but I got to swipe back. It was all right.
Yeah, and you can get me on at Rob Calder on Twitter if you need to. Not whatever BV tagged me in last week. I'm not too sure what that was or
Robbie
who that
Coulter
was.
7 or
yeah, something like yeah. that. I just thought the coaching department had doubled, which was going to be fantastic on my end. So a little bit of help wouldn't have gone astray, but we'll take it all the same. You can get in touch with the hashtag Talking Split. Just a reminder, we do have a mailbag episode coming up, or a couple of episodes coming up. So if there is anything you'd like us to discuss, you are more than welcome to jump in and shoot us an email or get in touch on the socials and we can go from that point. So you guys had NPP camp over the weekend. Bestie, how did it look from the boys' perspective?
Really good. Really pleased with it. The biggest thing for us was legitimate size and length at most positions, and we've clearly gone down that path with our scholarships. And good to see the work that we did last year with the kids that had been in transferred, and then obviously the new kids coming in picked it up pretty good and culminated with a great game, the orange and blue game at the end of the camp on Sunday. So really pleased with it from a boys' perspective.
Yep. How about the girls?
Yeah, it was great. You know, we were probably a bit lower on numbers, so it really challenged them physically and mentally. But yeah, it's great to be in that environment and just be able to work on concepts and international level practice habits and things like that. So, you know, day two at the start was a bit tough. It was we really had to drive the energy a bit, and fatigue obviously being a factor in that. But they rallied and were able to finish. And again, we had a blue and orange game as well, which I think finished with a maybe 3-point difference. So yeah, really happy with how it all went.
Yep. And you were both happy with the transfer from training into the game at the end of it, I'm assuming?
Yeah, so the girls, you know, we did a lot of concept work, and you know, the ability to, I mean, girls, I talk about it all the time, girls are over compliant at times, so sometimes where there's a layup where they could kick ahead and get on the rim, they're trying to run the concepts, which, you know, pros and cons, but yeah, they really made an effort to be a bit more read-react based rather than an offense, and us, you know, having it that this isn't an offense, it is offense. And I know that probably doesn't make a lot of sense, but, you know, we're not teaching you, you know, no disrespect to these offenses, but we're not teaching you flow, we're not teaching you the shuffle, we're not teaching you these things that are A to B, B to C, C to D. This is defense takes this, we take that. And, yeah, it was clunky at the start, but, yeah, it got pretty good towards the end.
Yep.
Yeah, and the boys, obviously, polar opposite. You know, like we had a lot of stuff out of broken play, but we worked on that as saying that's okay. We know that that's a huge percentage of scores in modern basketball, and we've got to be able to play that way. So we put a lot of emphasis on lane running, spacing the floor, decision-making 2-on-1, all those types of things, and it was good. And just lastly, I wanted to just touch on the amount of network coaches that we had come to the camp. I was quite pleased with that. We had several coaches reach out to us wanting to just come to observe, and we make sure that we include them. We give them session plans. And the pleasing thing for me is in our breaks, there was lots of really good question asking by those coaches around why this and how come that and how can I implement this at my level? So from that perspective, and I know obviously this is a coaching podcast, so really pleased with that.
Yep, no, that is fantastic. It's the best way to actually learn is to go and see other people take training sessions and get on floor and be around, in all honesty, those type of athletes too. Like, you can be a fantastic coach, but if you, and I don't want to say this flippantly, but if you only coach a young level or a very base level of athlete, you're probably not going to really progress in that space. You need to work with better athletes to really improve and work out, does it really matter if they go with their left hand there and not their right hand, which might be something you're dealing with in under 12s. And it's like, well, no, they can go with their left hand there because they're just that good. So you've got to try and dig a little bit deeper in that space as well.
Well, and that's one of the challenges I think we had in the beginning with our concepts and our decision-making is they were being challenged to not just settle for what, say, works on a Friday night. So because these athletes are bigger, stronger, faster, you know, the higher end skill, all that sort of thing, they, on a Friday night, in broken play or, you know, they may get away with making the wrong decision, but it still comes off. Whereas when you get into that environment, now you're being challenged to that sort of stuff doesn't cut it, and you're going to have to, you know, make the right decision more often than not.
Yep. So always good to get the best kids in the state on the court together. Like, I think that's a great way of doing it. Obviously, you've both had a little bit of an opportunity with that over the last block of coaching with Giddy Daniels Cup and the ladies were in on a Monday night.
Monday
I feel
night,
like they're in it at Mullum Mullum. So the more often you can get that, obviously, it's one of those steel sharpened steel things where they're just going to get better quicker. Topic today. This is a little bit different on our end. So we're going the would you rather. So I'll throw out two opportunities, really basic. Give me your opinion on it. If there's something there, we'll unpack that a little bit more. You can go your 5-second hot take if you want to. I know you're going to ask questions a bit. Oh, so when I say this, do you mean this? Like, I get it. Like, there's no problem with that either. Like, I'll give you some other parameters around that if we have to. So as an example, Bestie, Melbourne Tigers or Casey Cavaliers?
Oh, tough one. It's got to be Casey.
Yeah, because you're coaching there now?
No, just it was my first club.
Yep,
makes sense. First club, and obviously I still had a great time with Tigers when I played there and still very connected there. But yeah, it's just my club and where I grew up and yep. Yeah, and obviously doing youth league there now.
Yep. So sorry, Nick. Stuff. Yeah. He'll be okay. Like, I'm sure he'll push past that. So it'll be that sort of thing. So if you have opposing views, no issue at all with that. It's probably a little bit more entertaining if you do, but if you believe in something, stick with it, even if you both agree. Very much cool with that. So first question up. Zoe, you can take this one off the bat and we'll go there first. Head coach or assistant coach? Which would you rather be?
I'm going to try and avoid putting the caveats in. Yeah. Yep. So I'm going to say head coach. I really enjoy being able to get a group and work with them, create a vision, create a program and work towards something. I'm also, and it's probably a weakness of mine in the sense that if something, it's a bit of a control freak issue, that if something's going to go wrong, I'd rather it be my fault than somebody else's.
Fair. Bestie, any different?
No, not too different. Obviously want to be a head coach. I think the control thing is obviously something that we all need to work on, I think. But having said that, I've had really positive experiences being assistant coaches and yeah. I think it's because, being an assistant coach, and it's because I've been given an area of responsibility is when I've enjoyed it the most.
Mm. Yep. So, I mean, there's obviously a lot to still get out of being an assistant coach. It's not necessarily a pecking order thing. It's just that person is the head coach and responsible for it. And as long as it's a fairly collaborative effort, you can get a lot out of both things. So I don't think there's a right or wrong in that one.
Absolutely. Like, I'm assisting with the Bendigo Spirit this year. And whilst I haven't been there as much as I would like to because of the demands of this role, the times I have been there, the things I've been able to learn and just little things, little detail things, and being in that environment has been amazing. So, you know, I wouldn't I think a thing to, you know, remember when we're talking about this sort of thing, would you rather be an assistant or a head coach? There's things to learn in both, but go through the assistant coach path first. You know, pick up those things with somebody who's had the experience, who's gone through the assistant before you and all those sort of things. So then when you do get time to be that head coach, you're ready because we say it all the time, the difference between the assistant coach chair and the head coach chair is like 700 degrees. Like, it is.
It's like being in the gaze room at Basketball Victoria versus being in the walkway.
It is really hot in here. It is
very hot.
But, yeah, you know, I think sometimes we can look at, and whilst I'd prefer to be a head coach, I would never sort of shoo away the opportunity to be an assistant coach with a coach who's, you know, experienced and got something to offer, because the things you can pick up will then help you for when your time comes. Yep,
definitely.
Like that. Bestie, we'll go you on the first one with this. Would you rather be the best offensive team in the competition or the best defensive team in the competition?
Yeah, it's offense.
Yeah, always.
It's offense. Even though everybody gets on me because I wasn't a phenomenal defender, how hard I coach defense now, and it seems to be because of our balance at the HP department that I always end up taking defense at the camps. Seems to be that way.
Yeah, just Coop's not a defensive player as much as he may claim to be.
We gave him some shell and he actually really took it well at MPP camp. He was good. But what I will say is I just think, for me, it just requires more coaching, you know, and I think that's why I would like to do it, because it's fun, you get easy engagement. Yeah, I'd rather be the best offensive team.
Yep. Zoe, how about you?
Outscore them all the time. No, I'm not saying ignore defense, but... yeah, like Bestie said, it's fun. It's a lot of fun. You know, defense is important, definitely. And I'm a bit like Bestie. I need to spend more time on it. You know, I had a session last night in Ballarat, and I think out of the 90 minutes, we did 10 minutes of defensive stuff. But it's, you know, you watch your games, and even if you can be the best offensive team, I don't think the best defensive team could actually... you've still got a chance of winning against the best defensive team.
See, I disagree with you there, because I feel like you can have a bad night offensively.
Well, you can, yes.
And that can really screw you, whereas if you're fairly consistent defensively, you're always going to be in with a chance.
Yeah, but that's talking, again, your little caveats about. Like,
no question.
I'm saying overall, if you're the best offensive team... like, we talk about it all the time. We're like, hey, good D, better offense. You know, so you can do all the things right defensively and people can still score.
Yep.
So it's that sort of thing.
So interestingly, you both made the same point. Offense is more fun. How do we make defense more fun then? Like, is there anything that we can do in that space where we really haven't sort of touched on it yet?
Yeah, well, the first thing is you've got to reward it.
Mm.
You know, and we've been doing a lot of stuff like that. You know, it's interesting when we'll say, you know, first team to three stops wins, and a team gets a stop on defense and they automatically want to run out and play offense. I'm like, no, you want to stay in here and play defense to get your next stop. So, you know, obviously that, but you just, the good players, and we're lucky to work with them all the time, they know that it directly impacts winning. And we don't undersell the fact that you have to be able to defend and make it difficult to be able to do that. But Rob, you put us in a tough spot. We had to choose
one. We had to make a choice.
I get it.
Yeah.
I get it. And don't get
don't
me wrong.
Don't put caveats in. But
I get that. But it's one of those areas too where no player is going to turn up and go, geez, I really hope we do that closeout drill for 15 minutes tonight. Yeah. Where they're going to turn up and go, geez, I hope we get some catch and shoot stuff or some stuff off the bounce. Like, it's fun for the players too.
Well, I'm sorry to say this. I actually said to my wife, I said, who goes into their backyard and practices defensive slides?
Yeah.
Right? She turns around and goes, I did.
Well,
really? Yeah, I did. Okay.
Did she have a ring?
Well, she got to play some junior stuff and.
No, I mean, did she have a ring in her backyard?
Oh,
like,
right.
Maybe that's why she was doing defensive stuff. She had no basket.
No, she did. She had a really gnarly hill in the backyard though. So if you were going to shoot, you had to be prepared to go running as well. So,
but, character building.
Yeah, and I just think, you know, we all know that offensive skill and understanding takes a lot of time to develop. So in our space, that's why we probably spend more time on it, and level of proficiency in it defensively really just determines how far you'll go. You know, I think if you move up a level, obviously if you can't defend it, you can't play it. I'm sure everyone's heard that before. And I think a lot of that happens via osmosis. Like, it has to be, it's a necessity. If you can't do it, you can't, you know, you won't play at that level. So a lot of that development as you move up levels happens out of just desire defensively.
Yeah. And that's where we talk about it all the time on the pod. Our games approach coaching style comes into it, and it's why it's important, because you can work on the O, at the same time you're working on the D. So, you know, you have your constraints for the offense, but then you also have them for the defense, and or you might have constraints for offense, reward for defense. And now all of a sudden where our drills become more holistic.
Yep. No, valid point.
Yep. And it's all tying together, Rob. So for those assistant coaches out there that,
there
you
go.
If you have a role and responsibility, you know, maybe you can do that. And yep. This is, you know, something that all head coaches need to do a better job of, making sure that their assistants have something to do.
Yep, absolutely. Zoe, you're up first on this one. Jump ball or possession arrow?
I have to put caveats in this one. I apologize.
Yeah, I understand where you're going with this one, I think.
So jump ball in everything under 12s and above. Under 10s and above. Anything below that, so 8s and 10s, possession arrow. Mainly because we've seen a lot of those games where with the littlies and it's jump ball, tips to someone, jump ball, tips to someone, jump ball, and about 5 minutes later someone's finally got it on their right hand and off they go and all 10 run together. So whilst that's annoying, I apologise, but I want jump balls. If I had to, like, gun to my head, bring back the jump ball.
Bestie?
Yeah, 100%. It's an exciting part of the game. You know, I know we all talk about budgeting our time, but clearly professional teams have more time and college teams have more time. So you see some really cool stuff done out of those scenarios. What I will say, here's my caveat. Obviously, I totally agree with what Zoe has said. There needs to be some sort of time penalty or technical foul or delay a game warning given for teams that are stuffing around not getting organised for it.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, okay.
Or when they try and change the jumper.
Yeah, all of that stuff. Yeah. Like, just,
oh, I've seen the small kid go against the tall kid and, you know, the tall kid's like, yeah, I've got this covered, and all of a sudden the little guard with hops has got, no, you don't.
And the crowd goes wild.
Yeah. It's, you know, that's a fun part. And like you sort of alluded to, like the plays you used to be able to run out of jump balls. Like in particular, like if you were on defense, you were praying that, you know, you weren't getting sealed out one way when it's down that end. It's a tough spot to be in. Yeah.
And if it was sort of semi-close to the opposition's circle, you'd hope that the ref gets it wrong and sends it to the center.
Yep.
Because it's like, at least we've got a chance.
Yep.
But they sit there 7 footer just right under the rim and tip and dunk. But yeah, no, I very much miss the jump ball.
Yep. No, we're all good there. Bestie, would you rather coach the underdogs or the favorites?
Oh, the underdog.
Yeah.
Definitely the underdog.
Yep. Zoe?
Oh, same. Yeah. Okay. Part of it's probably, probably twofold. As Australians, as a society, we love the underdog. But also, there's enough pressure on us. It's, you know, as coaches, if we can go into a game with no pressure on us, no fear, just have a dip at it and see how we go, great. I mean, it'd be nice to be the favourites because that means we're pretty good. But, yeah, I think the underdog, you know, it's always nice to jag a win against the favourites.
Oh, and I just think culturally we're, you know, being brought up to respect it. Almost every sporting movie is, you know, something about the underdog. You know?
I was going to say, it's never the best stories. It's like, yeah, we had an undefeated year and we just won the final by 20.
Yeah.
Like, no one cares. Like, it's like, no, we didn't beat them all year, but then we rolled them in the final. And, you know, that's the story that everyone still remembers over the years too.
So. Us against them, all of that.
Yeah, it's, I think, I mean, you both know that societally. I think it is one of those areas where it's like, nah, we've always got a little bit of a puncher's chance on this one. If we just keep it close enough for long enough, you know, maybe we get the upset and that sort of thing. So,
but it's when I think you made a really good comment, like when we talk about whenever you play the US, you know, it takes you 40 minutes to beat the US, but they can beat you in 5. You know, so it's that.
I think I stole that from Gorge, to be honest.
Oh,
yeah.
Whoever. Yep. Yeah, whoever said it. But
and that's what he said. Like, he was talking about, he's like, we had a great plan. Everything was going well. He's like, then there was an inbound player looked over, like, standing right next to me is Kevin Durant, who's 7 foot tall, moves like a point guard, shoots it whenever he wants. And it's like, oh, well.
You know, plans out the window.
It was nice. We're up by 16, and now we're losing.
But imagine knocking that team off, absolutely. Right? Like, imagine it.
Cool story.
Yeah.
Like, the Mighty Ducks were based around that as well.
Oh, quack.
Yeah, quack, quack. Yeah. All right, Zoe, you're on next. Juniors or seniors, which would you prefer to coach?
Is this a team in a season?
Yep.
Seniors.
Yep.
Yep. So, team in a season, seniors, definitely. If it's for development, juniors.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm the same. Seniors is, it's more relatable to what we want to be able to do as coaches.
you see the end product, so to speak. Like, I mean, you're in that youth league space, obviously, but you're in that weird transition period where they're coming out of juniors but wanting to go and play another league up. So, you know, where are the goalposts on that? Are you trying to win? Are you trying to just not get relegated? Like, it's a difficult spot to be in, but I think senior coaching is probably where you actually get to coach a fair bit. Like, I was, having gone through it this past 12 months, tactically, I did zero gameplay coaching. Like, you're just not in that opportunity to do it, and that's for a number of reasons, but you just don't get to do it. Whereas with the senior team, you get to prepare a scout, you then get to try and come up with a game plan, and you get a little bit more buy-in.
More of a chess match.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. I think you get to do a little bit more.
I've spoken to a lot of under 14 coaches, and I'm like, oh, yep, so what's your Friday night like? And they're like, I'm either trying to sort out my press breaker or tidy up my press.
Yep.
And that's their world. True, yeah.
There's no different there. Bestie, 12s or 18s? So if you are coaching juniors, which would you rather have?
18s.
18s?
Yeah, I've coached.
Same reason?
I've coached both. I think I really like the 18s because they hold you accountable. You know, and I often say, you know, under 12s, they'll do what you ask them to the best of their ability because you're an adult and they should trust you and they've been told to listen to you 90% of the time. Yeah. Some parents out there say not to, right? Under 14s, they start to understand the why, which is really fun. Under 16s, they are generally, I know better than you, man. You know, I'm good.
I got this.
Yeah. And then under 18s, obviously, those that want to be coached really hold you accountable. But hang on a minute, you said this. So that's why I like 18s.
And they're still there for a reason.
Yeah, it keeps you sharp. Yep. That's why I like it, yeah.
Zoe?
12s.
Yep.
Every day of the week. Yep. I think being able to get them early, get them and their parents' expectations of what, you know, if we're talking VJBL, for instance, what it should be about. So rather than about winning, more about development, I think you can have a greater impact. As well as I coached 2 years of under-18s, made finals twice and bowed out on finals because we had 2 years in a row because we had six players because of school formals. So that is no fun. The under 12s. If you think
school camp's any better in under 12s, you're very wrong there.
But they're rarely at finals time.
This is true.
I just think, you know, you can have a really positive impact and then you get to sort of watch what happens from there. Yep. So, you know, I think you have to, it's a different kind of coaching, but you have to coach everything, you know. And so whilst it doesn't keep you as sharp as, say, the athletes, you know, holding you accountable, you've got to be on top of everything. You've got to understand where they're coming from, understand what they're seeing. But I think the earlier we can catch them with, you know, show them where to look, not what to see, the better they'll be as an athlete going forward. So, yeah, I think and you know, you get to even celebrate really little wins, which is cool too. You know, you finally get them making a left-hand layup. You know, that's exciting. Whereas at 18s, it's like, yeah, man, that's another day.
I do find in 12s too, it really catches you out if you're a poor communicator.
Yeah.
Because amount of times you can say something that you just imagine that everyone understands and they go and do, like the video, I use it in coaching courses all the time, where there's that little kid with a tee ball and the coach says, you know, put your eye on the ball, and he literally goes and puts his eye on the ball, and it's like, yeah, good cue, and we understand what he's trying to do there, but what has the athlete heard? Mm. So there's a lot of coaches that I do actually recommend go back and coach under 12s for that reason in particular. Like, if you spend a lot of time in that 18s group, head back. Like, go and see what it's like down there again.
Spot on with the communication. Like, COVID, I think, for me, taught me a lot about communication because we were having to do it through Zoom. And so we weren't there to actually, you know, when they weren't understanding or something, like, we weren't there to be able to then demo or, you know, walk them through it. So, yeah, that communication stuff is huge and even bigger with those younger athletes. And now that there's the size 5 basketball, I want to go and enjoy it.
Yeah, that's true too. I had a really amazing experience with some hearing impaired athletes when I was working for BTAS. And the biggest one was obviously non-verbal communication, and that was unreal. And then we had our SCP intro camp last year, and we asked someone to come and evaluate us. He's sitting to my left, and he said, "Oh, just be mindful of not turning your back to a group while you're trying to talk to them." And probably for the next, I don't know, 4 or 5 weeks, I felt like I was just spinning around in circles while I was talking.
And everyone's just, like, why is Bestie pirouetting? Yeah,
what is he doing? And in the end, I'm just standing in the corner, you know, just yelling across the court. Everyone like, yes, my back's to the wall. I'm good.
No, it is one of those things, like the communication piece. But you do also have to be a great communicator with 18s. Like, it is one of those, like, you can't be wishy-washy with your language or, oh, we'll just do this. And as you said, Bestie, they'll call you out for that. So it's not as if one will make you better over the other. I think you do need a little bit of variety.
Oh, it's going to be appropriate.
Yep.
Yeah. It's probably the...
Yeah, exactly right.
And I think with the 12s, with your communication that you're talking about is massive, it's also about managing your emotions too. So if you're annoyed at something and then you try to communicate, that could actually frighten under 12s, whereas an under 18 might say, oh,
whatever.
Or have the emotional intelligence to know that you're not mad at them, you're mad at the situation that's going on or whatever that might be. But in 12s, they don't have that emotional intelligence yet. So you've got to keep that.
Or intelligence in most cases. Like they are just lunatics. Love them to death for it. Like it is one of those areas. They don't have basketball IQ yet.
Yeah.
Like they just see ball, get ball, and that's what it looks like, and which is great too. Yeah. Like you don't have to coach effort with under 12 kids. Whereas sometimes in 18s, it's like, geez, we really turned up for this one tonight. So you do have to be a little bit mindful in that space too.
Yeah.
All right, Zoe, imagining all players are equal, you're going into trials. Would you rather pick the good post player, the good wing, or the good point guard first? Like, assuming you can only have one of the three.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
And everyone else is the same. I'll take the best point guard.
Best point guard?
Yeah.
Bestie, what are you going with?
I'm going the wing.
Going the wing. Okay. Explain.
So for me, I think the organizer, facilitator, if I can have almost like a second coach on the floor, which is what your best point guard, I would say, or assume that's a skill that they have, then they should be able to bring others into the game and achieve what we want to try and achieve because they have the ball in their hands more often than not.
Yep. Bestie, wing.
Just versatility. Yep. That's, you know, if I had to choose, you know, I could take one best player, if that makes sense, one 10 out of 10 maybe. Just the versatility. So if they are the best wing there, they probably can play down and they can play up. So that's why I would choose that. But just want to make it very clear that I still think, you know, a post would be desirable.
Please keep picking the post.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And we all definitely want them. However... To Zoe's point, if you don't have someone that can bring the ball down the court and throw it to them, well, you know, like that, that's difficult as well.
It doesn't matter if you've got bigs.
Yeah. So the thing for me is really just the versatility. And that's, you know, if you can have someone that can do that and play up and down positions that, you know, plugs a lot of holes.
That makes a lot of sense.
What do you pick?
Having had size this year with my 18s team, having had okay wings, but not really point guards, I'd probably take the point guard. Just because I saw how disorganized we were at times. I mean, you make a great point, Bestie, the versatility. Like, can you make that wing into a point guard where they're that big point guard and can solve some problems, but can they also solve some problems? You make a really good point there, and I may actually change my answer now that I think about that. It was more I didn't have a point guard necessarily this year that I had a lot. It's not that I didn't have faith in them, but it was one of those areas where they hadn't ever been a point guard. They'd always played off the ball, and now trying to get them to play with the ball in their hands, that took some time.
We just watched an inside head conversation out loud. Did you see that?
I bounced around that thing like there was no tomorrow. You got a real insight into my timeouts as well.
You're
like
still scorned by this last year too.
Yeah.
You have no idea. Like, trust me. Bestie, great shooter or great driver? Which would you rather have on your team?
Shooter.
Yep.
Same.
Shooter, okay. Obvious reasons?
Well, I think the great shooter will become a great driver because the closeouts will end up being that, you know, that hard.
Yep.
Yep. So exactly. You don't become a good driver if they never have to close out.
Yeah, correct.
Well, and if you've got, I think one of the things that's important though is if you have a great shooter, you have to find a way to get the ball inside the paint, whether it be through a big in the paint or through penetration. But I don't think you have to be a great driver to be able to get your shooter open. Whereas, like, you know, your great shooter will help you be able to get that penetration because they have to stay at home on the shooter and they can't come off and help and all that sort of stuff. So I think you could be a mediocre driver and still be effective if you've got a great shooter, but I don't think it flips.
Mm. Yep. No, I think that's a valid point. Like the you can just do more stuff with shooters too, which sounds dumb, but you can just create more problems. Like the whole idea of your offense is to move the defense, and you can't always move the defense when they're drivers because they just sit in there and wait for you. Whereas if that's a shooter, you at least know one hand is going out there on a closeout, if not two, if it's a really good shooter. Like we've all seen that kid that's maybe stuck two or three threes in a row and the panic and fear that sets in when you see that kid in the corner and the ball's going on a reversal, like four kids are running at them the next time through. It just causes more problems.
Yeah.
And it gives you the flexibility to get into action. So, you know, you're coming, that shooter's coming off a dribble handoff. You've got to try and fight over the top of that. Two will likely go to them. So then our roller or popper or whoever it might be now is just wide open and you're in advantage play. So I think even at an average level, if you've got the advantage, you're obviously in a really good spot.
Yep. Makes sense. Zoe, sit or stand when you coach?
I stand.
Yep.
Yep.
Bestie?
Yeah, I stand also.
Yep.
For most of the time. Yep.
Do you sit at any stage or?
As you would know, I sit for the start and then as soon as something happens, good or bad, I'm up and then I'm not down again.
So roughly 7 to 8 seconds?
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't take too long. Are you a pacer, bestie, or are you tend to sort of stand in the one spot? Like which one are you?
No, I'm up and down the sidelines.
Yep.
Yep. Yeah, up and down the sidelines and I think I just try to impact the game however I can. And same as with the sitting down. Sometimes if I want to talk to an assistant or need to talk to a player, you know, I think standing over the top of them at times isn't great. Definitely with juniors, you know, getting down on their level is something that's important.
Yep.
Yeah.
If you are going to talk to your assistant coaches, so when you structure your team bench, for argument's sake, do you have your assistant coach then a gap then your other assistant coach, or do you have like a pecking order? Like what do you prefer?
I like to sit in the middle of them, yep, to be honest. I've seen that.
Talk to both?
Yeah.
Yep.
I would sit in the middle of them, but again, probably a weakness of mine, something I've got to get better at. I will often have messages come through one assistant and generally the more senior of the two assistants, mainly because I know that then that message will be succinct, quick, and what I need to hear rather than having, you know, 85 voices. You know, we've all seen timeouts where, you know, you're sort of sitting in the stand going, are you going to talk to the players? Like, because there's so much talk going on. So if it's coming through one, that's not to say ignore the other assistant,
yep,
but have it go. That's just, I suppose, an easier thing for me to be able to manage.
Yep. You're coaching a team. If you can't have 10 players at practice, what number do you want, bestie?
If I can't have 10.
If you can't have 10.
I'll have 12.
Go the other way. Think juniors. I like what you've done there.
Yeah,
well done, sir. Well done.
No, I'll have 9.
Yep.
I'll have 9 because, I mean, obviously you're going to have to do 4-on-4 anyway, but to have a sub is definitely good. And the ability to be able to coach people when they're out maybe a little bit. And because I'm clearly picking all wings, we're going to be so versatile that it's not going to matter.
Yeah.
So 9.
I like it. So
I'm 8 or 6.
Yep.
So I hate odd numbers.
Yep. 7. Like, just to put it out there, 7 is the worst number of kids to have at practice. Like you do 3-on-3, but you've got this one kid that's sort of standing there and you can't go 4-on-4 and do any shell stuff. Like it is the worst number in the world.
Well, and I think about it as if we're talking juniors here, you've probably only got an hour for your session anyway. So I don't really want anybody sitting out. So even numbers at the very best, I think, and it keeps everybody into it. You know, you can play your 3-on-3, you can play your 4-on-4 and get involved that way and just play in small-sided games.
Yep. So I think 9's great. Like cutthroat drills and those types of things are fantastic, I feel like, with the 9. That's a lot of fun, but yeah, 7.
7 stuff.
7's
the worst number in the world. It's just so bad.
At what point do you call practice off?
So I did it this year when I hit 5.
Yep.
Like I'd do 6. No problem, but as soon as I hit the 5, I was like, nah, don't worry about it. And to be fair, it was usually because of the 5 that were turning up, 2 of them were country kids.
Yeah.
So the one was coming down from Shep, 1 from Macedon, and it's like, hey, I'm not dragging you guys down for that.
What
like,
about you, Zoe?
So
we're talking team practice. We're not talking like an SDP or whatever.
Yeah, so if I'm probably at 4 if it's an hour session because I'd run it as an indie. anything less than four, then it's, yeah, it's probably done for me. Yep.
What would you go, Bestie?
Yeah, similar. I think the where they're coming from is important, obviously. Yeah, probably five, I would say, for a team practice. Yeah,
yeah, it's just tough. Like, you want to do something competitive, and there's only so much, okay, first to seven makes gets the win that you can kind of do before they kind of tune out on that, I feel.
Typically what I would do, and this is just a, I guess, a bit of a idea, is maybe put it out to the players and go, look, we're only going to have five. We can do an indie session. If you're going to come to that still, please let me know.
Yep.
Mm. Yeah, and then you can change your plan, obviously, and your level of enthusiasm changes from, oh, no, we don't have practice, to, hey, you know, we've got an opportunity to work, play at ABC. Yeah.
And they want to come in.
Yeah.
So your mindset is completely different to, oh, this is just who I have.
Yeah.
So
correct.
They want to be here for
it. And you just shift the needle for what we're trying to achieve. And yeah.
And I suppose the issue that the coaches, especially, you know, VJBL and domestic coaches that might be listening, you're often only finding that out, though, an hour before your session. You know, like, it's, you
that
might
is one of the questions I have down later. Sorry. So we'll come back to that.
Circle
we'll
back.
Come back to that. Yeah. Zoe, you're on next. Would you rather have the athlete that is too passive or too aggressive?
Too aggressive.
Bestie?
Too aggressive.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I think it's easier to pull back than it is to push forward. So it's one of the reasons why we're teaching contact denial at the moment on the girls' side. Also because that's what's being done at an international level and we need to learn to play against it. But it is, you know, if you've, it's the hardest thing. You do the hardest thing first, and then if they go into a pack system, well, that's easier to pull back. If you've always been in a passive system, and then someone says, get up and be aggressive, that's a really big shift. Like, it's a whole shift in mindset and, you know, skill-wise and all those sort of things. It's easy to stand in a gap. It's not easy to get up and be aggressive and physical. So, yeah, I think pulling back is easier than pushing forward.
So how do you have those conversations then, Bestie? So how do you make the overly aggressive kid a little bit more passive, but also how do you make the more passive athlete a little bit more aggressive?
Well, I think we'll address the aggressive athlete first. It's more around the consequences for the team. I think that's the easiest way you can say it. So if you've got the kid that's always going all out for the steal and only gets it, you know, and you need to come to them with some data, you know, and like, you know, you've gone for seven steals and they've been all Hail Marys and you haven't got it and they've scored directly on the other end. So I think...
you fouled out 4 weeks in a row.
Yeah.
Like maybe pull it back a touch.
Yeah. So the impact on the team is probably the easiest way to do that. And more just if you have a plan for something, can say, you know, the other four players are doing this and you just break the plan because you feel that's, you know, see ball, get ball or whatever it might be, that hurts the rest of them. Now, I want to be very careful here in saying you don't want to stifle that. You as a coach have to find a way to adapt that person. And we've had some discussions recently about D-trans at our just at our camp level, and we all have different philosophies on what should be taught. But because we don't get the kids together regularly, we've really narrowed it down and said, well, if you're a post and your man goes to rebound or player goes to rebound, you can go and rebound. If you're the point guard, get to the nail so you can pick the ball up. Everybody else you can get back unless you're a go-get-it person. So that is an example that you don't want to stifle that aggressiveness from somebody that has a natural nose for the ball, can go and get that. Goes back to the awareness point of the other four players need to know this guy's going to or girl's going to go and do this, so we have to be able to adjust. How do you get the passive player to become more aggressive? You know, there's a lot of stuff out there saying you can't necessarily teach it.
Yep.
You know, and this is why we have it as one of our pillars, the competitive side of it. So I think you need to just put them in a competitive environment as much as you can, reward winning. It's difficult. It's a really tough one.
I had a kid going back probably 10 years ago now that just didn't feel comfortable with physical contact.
Yeah, right.
And that's between players. So, you know, wasn't necessarily coached towards player, but it was literally, I don't like touching other people. So we had to get them to a point where it's like, well, look, we're going to expose you to this a little bit during your training sessions where we need you to have an arm bar on the hip and just get them a little bit more comfortable. Look, it's not going to hurt you or anything like that. There's a comfort thing that obviously makes it a little bit more difficult, but it was a slow build. Like, and it took us 12 to 18 months to get them to a point where they were content with a body on a box out and those types of things. And unfortunately, it was like the second tallest kid we had in the team. It's like, yeah, you probably got away with your 12s and 14s without having to box out, but congratulations at 16s, you're going to have to find a body. So it's a tough sell for a lot of kids too.
Yeah, I've recommended an athlete before to go and take some judo classes.
Yep. Yeah, it's an interesting way to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like the cross-pollination in that.
Yeah.
All right, Bestie, we're back on you. Would you rather have the athlete that is lacking confidence or the athlete that is overconfident?
That is tough. That's different. That's different to the aggression.
I don't have thinking music.
I was going to say, though, everyone needs to know, we haven't seen these questions before coming here. Yeah, so that's not. Why it's a... Yeah.
Probably lacking.
Yep.
Probably lacking.
Yep. Zoe?
I'd take over.
Okay.
Yep.
Elaborate.
I think you can... let's talk about it from a shooter's perspective.
Yep.
You know, you need a shot. That overconfident kid, at least you know, has a chance of making it because they think they can. Whereas your underconfident is now up against it because they're not only fighting the defense in the other team, they're also fighting themselves. Yep. Whereas the overconfident, and I mean, you know, without to put the caveats in, I'd hope that the overconfident player is overconfident because they're skilled. You know, like, so you look at like a DJ, right? From who's playing at Sydney at the moment, the most confident kid I think I've ever seen, don a Vic Metro jersey, but backed it up.
Yep.
I said for a very long time, I was like, oh, I could not coach that kid because, like, watching him because of that confidence, it was almost intimidating. But now when you coach more and you gain more experience and things like that, and you think, I don't think I've ever walked away from a game saying, God, I wish someone just wouldn't take that shot. Like, often in the girls, I'm sort of saying, hey, someone shoot the ball, you know? So it's, I think I'd take the over.
Yep. Why would you go the other way, Bestie?
Oh, it's probably arrogance.
Yep.
I think, yep. You know, like, maybe my ability to help put that underconfident person in a situation where they can succeed and then grow their confidence.
Yep.
I think whereas the confident kid's always going to be confident, hopefully.
Yeah. Well, it's easier to build someone up, right, rather than, corral them into what you need.
But it is difficult with athletes that are lacking confidence because the smallest little thing that goes wrong can be a catastrophe. Whereas you sit there and say, oh, look, it's just one blown closeout, for example. That can really mess with kids that are lacking confidence too. Yeah. So the language you use, the demeanor you have when you deliver that message, trying to find the small wins that validate a little bit of what they're doing as well. Like, you almost have to give them some stuff that is not direct impact. Like, I had an athlete this year that put a lot of value in scoring the ball. So when they had 10 points, they assumed they'd played a great game. It's like, actually, you gave up 15. You probably didn't. Whereas you've maybe scored 2 points, but defensively your help D was on point. And to be fair, as a coach, I was really poor at pointing that out early on, and that impacted their confidence. And as I became a little bit more familiar with what they were going through and how they were mentally, I had to point that out a lot more. Like, that, look, yes, we've defended the on-ball really well over there, but we've only defended it because our split help is where they need to be to take the tag on that on-ball. Like, it's not necessarily the guard and the wing that have dealt with it. It's been the post player that's gone and blown that thing up for us in that space. So it is having that little bit of awareness too that you've got to give a lot of credit when something goes right that is not necessarily seen, like on a scoreboard.
Well, but it also becomes quite high maintenance at times too. So sometimes, and as coaches, that's our job. If you've got that player in your team that you need, that requires that maintenance, you have to do it. But if we're saying, what would you rather?
Yeah.
I'd probably rather not have to maintain one athlete versus the other nine for that much, you know, for what they require to get them to, you know, because like you said, you could be on this sort of, and for those that are
the visual reference here is fantastic.
It's like a linear progression line I'm doing with my hand. But you could be on that track and then one little thing takes you right back to ground zero.
Yeah. No. And so, I think can never miss an opportunity to have a rant, but just because of that parents, stop paying your kids per bucket.
Yes.
You know, stop rewarding them with, you know, $2 per bucket or whatever. Jeez, it is.
Incidentally, it's gone up.
Oh, mate.
Oh, man. That used to be like 10, 20 cents.
Hey, Tooth Fairy's giving notes now.
Yeah, well, I'm not even sure it's physical cash. I'm pretty sure they just cash up and just, yeah. Stop paying your kids per bucket. Please.
Zoe, would you rather a small and fast team or a tall and slow team?
Small and fast.
Yep. Bestie?
We can't say offense and then say we want the tall and slow team, right? Because we generally the way to outscore people is to create more possessions and play quickly, right? So,
yep.
Yeah.
No, I think that's valid. I think speed kills. You know, like it's, you're going to have problems with the quick players before you're going to have problems with the bigs. Like it's I coached years and years ago, but he was always an advocate with take the undersized better athlete rather than the oversized slower athlete. It wasn't exclusionary that we don't ever want them, but it was more a case of you're going to get hurt by foot speed before you're going to get hurt by size. And to this point, I feel like it's rung true with a lot of the teams I've had. But
it's a win now mentality. Yeah, it is. You know, and obviously that's not what we want to promote with a junior level, but yep. Yeah.
All right, Bestie, would you rather the week off in finals or would you rather play through?
Play.
Zoe? Play through, 100%.
Yep. Okay. What's your reasoning behind that?
Oh, just staying sharp. Yep. You know, staying sharp, keeping, you know, the team engaged in a routine, which is important of your... Now, you might obviously modify what you do,
yep,
but you've probably been doing that leading up to maybe on your practice prior to the game. But yeah, definitely play. Definitely play.
Absolutely. Same reasoning?
Absolutely. The routine, I think, is huge. I think once you... seem to remember a lot of teams that, whether it be at an NBL 1 or NBL level, WNBL level, who have gone on this massive tear of games in a row, and then instead of practicing on the night they normally practice, they go and, you know, bowl, or they, you know, do something, they go to the movies or something like that, and then bang, they drop a game. And it's like, I think it's a similar sort of thing, staying in that routine. And, you know, obviously, if you've got an athlete, one of your best players that's injured, having the week off is always helpful. And look, we were in a situation when I was coaching at Knox NBL 1 and we had the week off and we were able to get some players in to train against and scrimmage against. They became like our scout team, which was awesome, from other teams that had not made finals. And can't thank those players enough, because the stuff we were able to get to was great. But not everybody has the luxury of being able to do that. Like if you're a regional team or something like that, you probably don't have access to those sort of players. So, you know, being able to just play through, stay in your routine, stay sharp, you know, and, you know, have it just as any other game, I think is really important.
Excellent. I have a feeling I'm on you for this one, Zoe. Would you rather win the season or win a tournament in the season?
Season.
Yep. Bestie?
Yeah, season. Obviously, if we're playing in Australia this season, but if you're in a European league, obviously some of those cups are highly coveted and really really difficult to win as well. So we don't really have that structure in Australia as such. I know they're trying to maybe bring it in with the NBL,
NBL Cup.
The cup, but you know, having been involved in Europe, it's, you know, largely the cups and stuff are actually more important.
Yep. Mm. Yeah. Because you get teams from other divisions.
Correct.
Like, so if you're a Division 1 team, someone from Division 2 will come up and have a crack at you. And
yeah,
you don't want to be the one that loses to the Division team below and all that sort of stuff.
I can tell you it's a strange feeling rolling out, because I've experienced this, rolling out against the same team in the same week but in two different competitions.
Yeah.
And so one's in the cup and then one's in the league. And for me, it was two different balls also.
Yeah, okay.
Because one, the cup was sponsored by somebody else and... That's what happens when you're at the low levels that I was at. But you know, like that is, you know, the cup stuff hasn't really evolved here yet. I'd like to see it.
Yeah, it would be cool
that way.
I liked the cup they had in, was it last year in the NBL?
Yeah,
I really enjoyed it. I thought it was great.
I'd love one from a senior perspective here with like the big V competitions into the NBL one. It's like if you're an NBL one team and you have to play a Division one team during that midweek. If you want to roll out your starters, roll out your starters, but obviously that's a little bit taxing on them. But if you feel like, yeah, we should be okay with a couple of our bench players and you lose it, cool story for the Div 1 team.
Well, definitely. And I found, once again, for us, it translated into more money. Because a lot of those games, a lot of those tournaments are elimination and you get bonuses on wins and games played. So I found that the players really got up for the cup games because we're like, hey, man, we need to win this. Yes. I don't know, like, yeah.
Absolutely. Bestie, music at practice or no music at practice?
Yeah, music at practice, but for a time and, you know, not for the whole practice.
I thought you were going to say for a genre only, like it's, you know, no 70s music
dropping
or anything
like
that.
Nathan Cooper Brown beats.
Well, it's just appropriate. It's got to be. But I think that it can be good. But once again, you can't do that if you've got, you're sharing a court with someone and there's somebody else on the other, you know. Yeah. But I think definitely for the you know, maybe pre-practice shooting component stuff, it's just, it can be good.
Yep. Zoe?
Yeah, definitely for things like indies and, you know, especially if you're early morning and, you know, it just adds a little bit of, I guess, vibrancy to the session because it's early and they'd rather be in bed. But if you're heavy teaching, then obviously not.
Yep, no problems. You can only have one, on-ball or off-ball screens.
Oh, I like off-ball screens.
Yep, bestie. Oh, he's swiveling in the chair.
Well, you know, I'm just going back to my team full of wings. So it's probably going to be off-ball screens, I guess.
We do see a lot of on-ball screens, but you don't need a lot of intelligence to play off an on-ball screen. I mean, you do to do it well, but, you know, even a bad on-ball screen can be enough to throw the defense out, whereas the off-ball stuff and the continual movement and the space that creates and all those types of things, I feel like is a lot more aesthetically pleasing to watch.
Well, there's obviously more options with an off-ball screen. You know, you can pin down, you can stagger, you can flare, you can hammer, you know. You've got a million and one options for you there. So that's obviously one reason. I really like what it promotes in the sense of go get someone else open. Mm. You know, instead of sticking the ball under your arm, calling somebody up to get you open, you know, go get somebody else open and be good at that, you know. And if you can be good at that, the better you get at it, the more likely you are to become open yourself. But, you know, that sacrificial stuff, I think, is really important and something we've got to try and get in. You know, the rate of the on-ball screens at the World Cup had dropped dramatically. So the on-ball screen is kind of, it'll never go away, don't get me wrong, but the use of it is reducing. So there is more of an emphasis on things off the ball and using cutting and screening, different type of off-ball screening actions to get open. So, yeah, I think play through that. It's more fun to watch too.
Just want to say that they can't be mutually exclusive either.
No.
Like you've got to have both. You've got to have one to make the other work.
Yep.
You know, so.
Makes sense. Bestie, would you rather do the written or the video scout?
As in for me
to
prepare
which
it?
Which would you prepare?
Oh, the video.
Video, yep. Zoe?
Yeah, video.
Yep. What's your reasoning behind that?
Just with today's player.
Yep.
It's more how they learn and relate, I think.
Yep.
And it's obviously, I think it's, how can I explain this? The biggest thing for me is probably how kids learn now or how people communicate now is more digital, I guess. Yep. But I just think seeing it happen is probably, for me, is better than reading it, saying this is what they're going to do.
Yep. Zoe?
Yeah, much the same. You know, I think you get more bang for your buck with the video. I think you can attack more points. So in the one possession, you can probably see two or three things that you can talk about as opposed to if you were to write those two or three things and then on the next one, write the two or three things and then write the two, then it becomes, you know, like War and Peace. I can't even get through a long email without zoning out. So, you know, I can only imagine what the athletes are thinking when they get really detailed paper scouts. So I think Bestie's hit the nail on the head.
Yep. All right, Zoe. Someone's missing practice. Do you want a call or are you okay with a text message?
I'm okay with a text message. I think because generally I'm probably driving anyway. So, I think we need to accept the world, especially if they're juniors, but accept the world that we're living in at the moment. They're in that the athletes, young athletes, do have an issue communicating face-to-face or that direct. They find it a little confrontational. So I think as long as it's coming from them, that's the, I suppose, the one thing I want to put in there. I'm okay with a text message, but I want it from them. I don't want it from mum or dad.
Bestie.
Yeah, text is fine, but give me some detail.
Yeah.
Yep.
Don't just be
I
like,
I can't come.
I'm not coming.
Okay.
you know, like, give me some detail and make it, it needs to be, and your detail needs to be to a point where I don't need to write back. Now, obviously, I'll write back saying okay or whatever, but it shouldn't be to a point where I need to ask a question.
No, that's
so if you're injured or you've got a physio appointment, that's the only one you could get into, or you should say, hey, Darren, you know, today at school I ran into a fence post and, you know, currently I'm at the dentist. You know, I will let you know. That is the type of detail that we're asking for.
So you asked before, Zoe, how much notice? Like, as much notice as possible.
Yes. Yes.
Like 1 hour before practice. The one that nearly made me throw my phone was player X has been sick all day. So they're not coming to practice tonight.
Horrible.
An hour before practice.
Mm. It's
like, I've just put together a plan, assuming we have that athlete there.
Yeah.
And now you're being like, tell me that morning, look, they're crook.
We'll see how she goes.
Yeah, we'll see how they go from that end. Like, that's the one that would usually set me off. So the more notice you can give, obviously, the better in that space.
But that's also something as coaches we need to, in our parent and athlete meetings at the start of the year, that's got to be laid out. That's got to be one of the points. Hey, this, you know, unless your car's broken down or
you've
been in an accident or something in that time, obviously that's acceptable. You can't foresee that. But anything like that, sickness, injury, you know, whatever, that has to be communicated well before practice.
Is I have an exam tomorrow an excuse to not come to practice?
Depends what – sorry, bestie. I've gone with the pens.
You've gone against your own rule.
Year 12, I'll cop that. Like if they're doing a year 11 or year 12 subject and that's the exam, I will cop that. Year 9, no, I don't. Plan your time better. Like that's my read on it.
I'm probably a bit soft in this area because majority of the athletes that, as all of us as coaches that we're going to work with, will not make money off basketball.
Yep.
So, you know, yes, you need to. And look, if you're missing 3 weeks worth of practice because, you know, you've got an exam and well, now we need to talk about it. Yep. But if, and I suppose that comes back to all of it, right? If there's one athlete that's attended everything and even when they're injured or all that sort of stuff and they've been at everything and they say, hey, look, I've got an exam tomorrow, I just need this. Sure. If you're wishy-washy and you're in and out and all that sort of stuff and you don't communicate properly and all that sort of stuff, oh, I've got an exam, I'm going to say yes because school should always come first.
You don't have a choice, really.
Mm. But I'm going to be annoyed at it.
Yeah. What about you, bestie?
Yeah, much the same. I think, once again, what's the detail in it? Are they coming to you saying, you know what, I'm really nervous about this because I haven't prepared?
Yep.
Not, I've got an exam, so that's my right to not go. You know, and largely the level of athletes that we're dealing with, many of them do have professional aspirations and we know that it's really tough to get there, but a lot of them will have college opportunities.
Yep.
And what I can say to you is it's really hit and miss with your professor. Some of them are really forgiving and love the sporting landscape and might give you some extra time or whatever if you're away on the road, but some just hate it and hate the entitlements that you get by being an athlete, and so they won't care.
Yep.
Hopefully your advisor picks which teachers you go with so you can avoid some of that.
All right, last two questions. Bestie, same starters each week or do you change? Like you can only have one or the other.
So it has to be different every week?
Yep.
Ooh. Wow. Yeah, and my head automatically goes back to, well, if we bring the jump ball back in, can I sub on a jump ball? Can I do this right?
Yeah.
Wow. No, I've got to change.
Yep.
Got to change. If I can only do one or the other,
yep,
I would have to change. Yep. Because if someone's not performing, you don't want to be able to...
Locked in on that kid. Yep.
Yeah, that's tough.
Zoe?
Yeah, I had to. I thought I'd be better because I had time to think about it, but I think I'd stay.
Yep.
Yep.
Okay.
I think I'd show faith in the group and try and make it that, no, you guys got us.
Yep. Understandable. All right, last question. Zoe, you get to go first on this one. Your team hits the game winner, and it's a walk-off game winner. Are you storming the court and celebrating, or are you going and shaking hands with
Going and shaking hands. I really hate it when you put this in for me, haven't you?
Yeah, specifically for you.
I can't. And I'm not saying I don't understand it.
Yep.
I do understand it because winning, especially something like that, really exciting, especially if the game means something too, you know, if that's a final or... Yep. So I do understand it, but I really dislike the opposition coach who's just lost on that game winner having to stand there, you know, waiting. Because if they walk off, then they're a jerk. So yeah, it's like...
You can't win.
Yeah.
Literally.
Yeah. You can't win. So, I think let the players do what they want to do. And, you know, because at the end of the day... We haven't done it as the coaches. Like, our job was to guide them and get them through. May have drawn the play, but they executed it.
Yeah,
and their player, probably the confident player, hit the shot. So let them do what they want to do.
Yep.
But our job is to go shake hands, you know, and you can celebrate them with them after.
Yep. Bestie? He wants to storm the court. Look at him.
Look at his face.
He's dying to storm the court.
You know what? I'm just picturing that footage of the NC State coach
Jimmy V,
yep. Just storming the court with his hands up, running around. Like, that's just been playing over and over and over in my mind while Zoe's been saying that. But naturally, the right thing to do is to go and shake the coach's hand.
Yep. Yeah.
And I think that's what everybody would like to think that's what they would do. So yep. I would say that.
And it's funny you referenced him as well, because that's exactly what I was thinking of. Like, he's like gone full Superman, running around the court, trying to find someone to hug and all that sort of stuff. Like, there was the 30 for 30 doco on Survive in Advance, I think it was called, which was phenomenal. And they spoke to Jimmy V about it, and he's like, I see all these coaches that are just so gracious, and, you know, they they get the walk-off game winner, they just go shake hands. He's like, not me, I'm a lunatic. Like, I'm just running around, like, trying to find someone to celebrate.
At least he owns it,
Know who you are.
Yeah, exactly.
Know who you are.
Exactly. So, it's a fantastic doco for a start, but also his speech at the ESPY Awards was phenomenal, you know, as he was slowly dying from cancer, unfortunately. I would recommend coaches go and have a look on that on YouTube, because it's a great one to just sort of mentally check in with every now and again too. That wraps us up, so thank you both for giving up opinions on stuff with zero notice. It's always difficult to get done. Coaches, if you are listening to this and you disagree vehemently with one of these opinions, throw it out there on socials or show us an email or something like that. More than happy to continue to discuss this. There's no real right and wrong in a lot of these things. Like, it is just an opinion, and what you think today will potentially change tomorrow as well, and that's quite okay too. Like, it is a difficult one to be in. So thank you guys for giving up some time on that one. Coaches, do thank you for listening as well. Just a reminder, we do have the mailbag episodes coming up, so if you do have anything you want to send in that we want to discuss, please let us know and we'll get on there. And as always, please share the pod as best as you can. And we'll go from that point. We're going to get out of here before we die of dehydration. Both of you, thank you for jumping onto the pod. Coaches, good luck with your coaching, and we will catch you all next week. Love, tune in, enjoy the tribe.